Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kill Your Yo-Yo. My name is Ross Levine, and this is the one and only podcast dedicated to yo-yo theory, yo-yo performance, and yo-yo improvisation. This show is brought to you by Illinx, and before I get into today's guest, I want to tell you that the Illinx Melatonin, that's the yo-yo I keep promoting in these episodes, it's the yo-yo whose sales go directly to helping to support this show so that I don't have to, like, get ads or anything like that. That yo-yo has gone from $75 down to $60, which is amazing news for you because now you can pick up that yo-yo for even cheaper and it's still just as good of a yo-yo. This is a yo-yo that I worked really, really hard on. It's inspired by two of my favorite yo-yos, the Speeder 2 and the Rec Rev number 9. The Speeder 2, of course, is designed by Yo-Yo Jam. But the reason that it had to reduce in price is because sales were going pretty good, and then they dropped. And I realized that all of my best fans bought the Melatonin, and a lot of them bought them in person rather than from a retailer, because I was selling them in person. I was like, oh no, now my retailers aren't going to want to work with me for future yo-yos, and I think the reason is that nobody is willing to risk $75 on a brand that they haven't heard of before. So I figured, you know what? I'll bite the bullet. I'll just reduce the price down to $60. And that works out great for you. If you already bought a Melatonin and it was at $75, it doesn't matter where you bought it from, message me on Instagram and I will get you a rebate. Now, tell your friends to go buy a Melatonin, first of all, but let's get into today's guest. This is Jonathan Sitonggong. He is an amazing yo-yoer from Indonesia. He's just incredible. He has really beautiful tricks. If you've ever seen his Instagram or any of his performances, and or rather competitions, performances, he just has a beautiful way around the string. He's one of those yo-yoers that people really look forward to watching him compete and to watching every trick that he posts, and he works so hard on his tricks. We talk today about building a trick vocabulary, as well as kind of what goes into building a trick. We talk about what his theories on flow are and how that is sort of affects the style of each yo-yoer. And finally, we talk about a million things, but these are just three that I came up with. Another thing we talk about is building a cohesive routine that almost flows like a story in order to keep the audience's attention and keep them guessing as to what's about to happen. So we get really deep into the theory of tricks and routines and routining, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So without any further ado, here is Jonathan Sitonggong. Jonathan, welcome.
Hey, Ross. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, it's so good to have you. We have so much good stuff to talk about. Let's start with your backstory. How did you get into yo-yoing?
Okay, Ross. So first of all, I just really want to thank you for the opportunity for me to be on this podcast. So basically, I've been wanting to do a podcast for a really long while. Yeah. And like, to have my first podcast is about something I really love, which is yo-yoing. It's such an honor to me, and I really couldn't be more grateful for this chance. So without further ado, for my background in yo-yoing, I basically started yo-yoing around 2009, back when I was in elementary school. So back when I was in elementary school, I had kids in my school who were all crazy about yo-yoing because there was this hit show on the TV called Blazing Teens. I'm pretty sure some of y'all may have heard of that. And then I was pretty interested. I was like, oh, what's this? Let me try it. And then I was really kind of meh about it. But then I started learning tricks together with my friends on Expert Village. Shout out to Andre Boulay. And then I discovered that yo-yoing is actually very, very fun. And then as how all trends go, some of them just burn out. Most of my friends stopped playing yo-yo after 3 or 4 months. And then I gradually stopped playing too and started playing more online games rather than yo-yoing and completely dropped the whole yo-yo thing. Mm-hmm. And then around in 2013 or wait, yeah, 2013, early 2013, I rediscovered a yo-yo community in my area. And then it made me curious because I was like, oh, I used to play yo-yo back then. Why shouldn't I check it out and maybe like reminisce some of my tricks? So I get my yo-yo out and I start playing. And then I just get remembered of how lovely it is, how much fun it was. And then I went to the yo-yo meet the next week after like picking up the yo-yo again after almost 4 years. And then since then on, I've been still yo-yoing till this day and really, really happy with yo-yoing, with such a great community and all the friends I've made from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I am interested in the, because you are in Indonesia, right?
Yes, sir.
So I definitely want to hear about kind of what the community is like there, as it's different from the U.S. community. What kind of is the community like in Indonesia?
It's almost, I think, around 40,000 members, because it's really wide. Indonesia is really big. It has thousands, like around like 20,000 islands, if I remember correctly. And then like, so basically, yo-yoing is very, very widespread in Indonesia. But unfortunately, not a lot of people really show themselves out in yo-yoing. So basically what is known to the scene is only like a very small portion of what it's really like in yo-yoing in Indonesia. But other than that, the local community here is really great. People here are actually really supportive of each other. Like we're a really tight-knit group and all of us are really eager to learn from each other and have each other's backs, like some of us helping out events, carrying out demonstrations to toy stores, etc.
What toy stores are out there? Is there any kind of main hub that people hang out at?
Not really, actually. It's more like some people go to their own respective local toy stores and do demos there. Hmm. But sometimes we just, for like the whole city, which is my city is Jakarta, so most of my Jakarta yo-yoers gather and play yo-yo at the local mall these days.
Okay, and so is it common to see yo-yos getting sold at sort of the toy stores that are out there? And are they professional level or are they sort of small? Oh, I see.
Back then it was pretty all the hype back in like 2015 or 16, but now I rarely see people yo-yo honestly in public. Like it's very rare to see like some random person yo-yo in public, but every time I see it, it's just a fresh new view. Like, oh, you play yo-yo, so I play yo-yo too.
Kind of what's out there.
Yeah, but it's very, very rare. It's like it only happens like once a year when I randomly see a yo-yoer.
Hmm. I gotcha. So then another question is Blazing Teens. I personally never watched it. And I don't know if there's many people listening. I don't know. I don't know if it showed on TV in the US, but it may have. So I'm interested in like what the show was like, just because I've never seen it. Kind of what it was like. I've heard of it. I know it's based on yo-yoing, but like what was it?
So basically Blazing Teens was a Chinese series. It had five seasons, and honestly it was kind of weird to me, because some seasons it was live action and some seasons it was cartoons. So I couldn't really figure out what was going on. So yeah, so basically Blazing Teens is about, it's basically Beyblade but with yo-yos.
Okay.
That makes sense. Some people battle with yo-yo tricks, and like these yo-yo tricks have auras like dragons or tigers, etc.
Okay.
That sounds basically what your typical kid show would look like.
I gotcha. So sort of Power Rangers and Yu-Gi-Oh and Beyblade sort of mashed all together.
Yeah,
I got it.
Yeah, but yo-yo.
Throw yo-yos in. Nice. Damn. Yeah, no, we should have something like that. Get a US series like that.
Yeah, it definitely is really a great gateway for yo-yoing for the general public, like to get the public to like get into yo-yos. It's a really good way to start it in.
Yeah, for sure. I know a lot of people learn it from like a demonstrator comes to their school or something like that, or they see a friend doing it, but seeing it on TV, that adds a whole extra level. I know, like, generally, if you watch the Netflix series, The Toys That Made Us, all the time you realize, like, how deeply connected a toy series is with the TV series, like Transformers, for example. Like, they couldn't sell that without... without the,
oh, for sure,
the TV series, and they couldn't sell the TV series without the toys, so they kind of really interconnect. Also, He-Man was originally a toy series, and then they went and made the TV series. So,
oh shoot, really? I just knew that. Yeah.
That's a good series to watch.
Because Indonesia never shows He-Man on TV because I only knew it from memes.
Really?
Yeah, I only knew it from memes because He-Man wasn't like televised in Indonesia.
Oh yeah, I mean, I never actually watched the TV show. I only know it from memes, all the Skeletor memes. But yeah, no, it's a that's how it came about. Well, anyway, getting back to yo-yoing. Sorry, we're going on tangents here. Man, just for people. Also, I didn't really super introduce you. I mean, I'm gonna do it in the intro, but you're a national champion, correct?
For sure, yeah, I am. I'm the 2017 Indonesian National Euro Champion.
Oh, that's awesome. And I know you placed, I think, sixth in the scales competition that happened recently. You placed top 10, a lot of different competitions. And also, one other thing for people to look into is your Instagram page is, I mean, it's one of the bigger yo-yo Instagram pages, and you post such creative stuff on there. So people should definitely check you out on there. Which, by the way, if they want to look you up, it's JonathanStGGG. There's three G's at the end.
Yes, sir. Check out that. It's three G's in my last name.
There is?
Yeah.
Oh my God, there is.
Sitanggang.
Sitanggang. Perfect. Oh, and that's one other thing. Can you go through that pronunciation again?
Oh yeah, so basically I've had so many people mispronounce my last name. So for every one of you listening, how you pronounce my name is Jonathan Sitanggang.
Sitanggang.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Well, it's so good to have you here. So so we kind of know about your backstory, how you got into it. What were your inspirations? Once you started yo-yoing, you kind of know the community, maybe you're watching some contest videos. What yo-yoers were you most drawn to?
So when I first started out yo-yoing, a lot like any other yo-yoer out there, I definitely looked up to the freestyle of Hiroyuki Suzuki's 2005 World Freestyle Yo-Yo God. Such a legendary freestyle. And then from since then on, I've been like a really huge Mickey fan. Like, I watched all of his freestyles. And then some of my other inspirations were some of my heavy inspirations back then, like when I first started back again in yo-yoing, was also Marcus Koh and Tatsuya Fujisaka. Marcus Koh is the 2011 World Yo-Yo Champion, and Tatsuya Fujisaka is also the 2011 Japanese National Champion, if I remember correctly.
That's awesome. So those are, those are some good inspirations of people to look up to for sure. And kind of what did you see that you wanted to most emulate in those three?
Because when I first started out, I was actually very, very astonished by speed. Speed and flow were like, I mean, I know speed and flow, maybe to some viewers can sound very very contradictive, but like, but speed and flow is like something I really, really love to see, like how flashy speed, how like, because speed and flow really makes up for how flashy a trick looks, in my opinion.
Well, I'd say flow can happen no matter the speed.
Sorry?
I'd say flow can happen regardless of what speed the trick is happening at, right? Would you agree with
hold
that?
Hold on, I'm very sorry.
Oh.
Can you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. So flow can happen regardless of what speed the trick is happening at. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I went with that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So that's good just for people to look up those three. And then another thing is, like, what of all the things, because you sort of answered this in your backstory, but of all things to put your time into, why yo-yoing? Why not, like, some other thing like juggling or basketball, or, like, of all things, why yo-yoing?
Oh, so for the record, is I got very easily burnt out when it comes to, like, hobbies such as, like, online games, because I mean my friends who were playing online games didn't really stick that long in online games, and one of them, like, just went one by one. And then for the other record, I'm trash at sports. I can't do sports at all. I can only do the badminton, and that's it.
Badminton's a good sport.
For sure. Love that sport. And then the reason why I got really stuck to yo-yoing, it's because I think I got exposed to yo-yo the most for some reason back when I was a kid, because I always had a yo-yo lying around in my room. And then the community is really also very tight-knitted, which makes me, like, really, which is also a great aspect for me when it comes to learning things, because I tend to learn things better from other people and from communities too. So basically, I'd say the community and, like, the joy of finding or learning or landing a new trick is really what makes me stick to yo-yoing all these years.
Now, that's something I actually wonder about, because lately it seems like everyone used to live in Yo-Yo Expert, and before that it was Yo-Yo Nation, and then they kind of moved to Facebook's Yo-Yo BSTN Talk and other Facebook groups. I don't know that there's so much of that now. I know that all of those platforms still exist, but they all seem a little less active than they used to be. And for people who don't have yo-yoers around them and, like, a local yo-yo community, I don't know if the community is as tight-knit as it was when we were starting out. Would you agree with that? And maybe where do you think people are gathering these days?
Honestly, like, maybe I feel like the yo-yo community hasn't been really that active, because I'd say that, like, a lot of people feel familiar to me. Like, they find joy in yo-yoing with the people they meet in the community. And of course, the pandemic has made it pretty difficult for us to meet each other, right? So I think that the pandemic plays a part into, like, making people a bit burnt out from yo-yoing. So it kind of takes the enjoyment out of yo-yoing, because we don't really get to meet new people, etc. And, like, for people who live in, like, areas where there are no local yo-yoers, I feel that's also something really hard, because I feel like it's something really hard, because especially in keeping up, like, the consistency, like, to always look forward to yo-yoing, because, like, yo-yoing alone sometimes can be, like, it could get a little tiring. It could, like, stress you out a bit, because, like, you don't have anyone else to share this to, or, like, you don't have anyone to show tricks to. But that's what I like about social media too, like, or, like, the yo-yo BSTN Talk and Instagram, like, for people who don't really have any local yo-yoers in their area they can't meet, they share their tricks on Facebook and, like, or any other social media, and get, like, input or feedback from other people too, and make them interact more, even though if it's not in real life.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if as the kind of local groups start heating up again, like I know DXL just had one of its biggest meetups, and that's just my local Southern California group. And so I know all the other groups in the country and around the world are starting to meet up again. I wonder if as that starts getting the people who meet at those groups excited, those people will now go online and start getting the people who don't have local groups more excited, because now the online communities are active again and a little bit more hot than they used to be. At least that's my hope.
Yeah, I really hope so, that like with especially with US nationals happening too, right? Yes. As I heard, it could also like kickstart a lot of people's spirits back up into yo-yoing too. And maybe like, I hope it could like help the community regain the hype it had before the pandemic hit us.
Yeah.
It's just what I really hope. Absolutely. Because I really love to see everyone getting active in yo-yoing.
For sure. Man, I'm excited to see what happens with the community, because we got the most exposure in the world with TikTok right now. So this is the time to get people in. But I want to talk about, let's switch topics here for a little bit. You say, because you've done a lot of competitions, a lot of competing, a lot of performing. A competition is a performance, what you're putting on, and you make some really, really beautiful ones. How do you prepare for when you're making your performances and getting ready for competition?
Okay, thank you. So how I prepare for a competition is basically just, in recent times, I've been like, I haven't been like caring a lot about clickers, but I've been more focusing on I really want to make a performance that everyone can enjoy, and I could enjoy myself too. So it's like my own personal masterpiece. How do I say it? So my goal in yo-yo, in every yo-yo contest I do, like every new freestyle I make, I want it to be like a new masterpiece of mine, a piece that I'm really satisfied with, so people can also like, and I hope that with my mindset of I have to make my own masterpiece, I hope that my passion and love for yo-yoing also translates to the freestyle for everyone to see too, because that's one of my greatest goals when making the freestyle. But like, when talking systematically, when it comes to the freestyles, I usually for in real life freestyles, like for in-person freestyles, like back in like AP or nationals, I used to like prepare my freestyles around 5 or 6 months in advance, because I used to have a really hard time managing my time. So I had to gather up as much as time possible to like practice in small portions and get the consistency up. And then like for songs, like for song choices, it usually for freestyle preparations, I take the longest time in like picking my music, because I tend to be very picky with my own music. Hmm. And then once I find it, I try to divide it into like small portions and try to fill those songs up with tricks. Fill those sections up with tricks. Hmm. And like what I like to do is, it's also good advice I got from my friend, is to make like a freestyle as if you're telling a story.
Hmm. How do you do that?
So it's basically like an introduction and then a climax and then the conclusion or ending.
Okay. So I guess, well, let's talk about that, because that's something I definitely agree with. Because you know, everyone can relate to stories, and I think also generally songs follow a similar structure to that, so it's not too hard to like latch that into our yo-yoing. But as far as visually or technically in yo-yoing, what does the intro look like? What does the build-up look like? What's the climax look like? What's the falling action? What's the resolution or conclusion?
So like when making freestyles, what I had in mind was for the introduction. Like I'd like to think the introduction as like an, as like I want people to know what my tricks are like at first, so they will know what to expect for the remainder of the freestyle.
Hmm.
And then I save my heavy hitting tricks for the climax.
Okay.
So like people, so because like doing stories, some people like tend to get bored in the middle of the story because sometimes it gets stretched out too much. But what I really want to do in freestyles is like I want to keep maintaining the hype. I really want to keep maintaining the quality and make sure if not maintaining the quality, I really want to like make the quality of my tricks or like the quality of my performance a step up bit by bit throughout the freestyle. And then like for the ending, I really like to end it out with a bang. Like I'd really like to make an ending where it's like memorable for people or like it gets like people cheering really, really hard for me. It's something I'd really like to do for freestyles too, because even though it's high risk, I really like to end my tricks with and my freestyles with bangers, because if you hit your banger at the end of the freestyle, it's just the best feeling ever.
Plus, it gets people doing full on standing ovations, screaming for you.
Yeah, it's just really an ecstasy experience. I'm sorry.
Here's a question: if you had the choice between winning the competition or getting the most satisfying reaction from the audience, which do you choose? So well, like people are cheering and like patting you on the back, throwing roses on the stage, like versus getting first place, which do you choose?
Like both choices are actually, you can't go wrong with either one.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I'd really love it more if people appreciated my freestyle for how it is, regardless of positioning,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what place I get. If people also love it, then I'm also happy too. Because in freestyles, what I really want to show is like what my style is like, what my tricks are really like.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely an opinion, but on this podcast, you gave the right answer. that definitely falls in line with how I think.
I'm glad I did.
Yeah, no, the way I'm thinking is like Anthony Rojas for me has always been my favorite yo-yoer, and like I don't remember who won at the Bill Leibowitz Classic in 2017 or whenever I saw him, but I definitely remember Anthony's performance because he was the one who I was just like, wow, this guy's so good.
Oh, for sure, man. Anthony Ross is such a cool dude, and he has such a great style. I also love watching him. His 2015 Worlds in Tokyo is also one of my favorite freestyles, too.
Oh, completely.
Such a beautiful freestyle.
His scales freestyle, I forget which one, but one of the scales competitions that he made was so good. It was just so clean. Sure, man.
He really can't go wrong with his freestyles. It's always such a treat for the eyes.
Oh, completely. So then I think you covered intro, climax, and ending. What about the rising and falling action? Because that's, I mean, going back to fifth grade, we go into what a story is. Kind of like in the rising action, you're building tension. In the falling action, you're kind of like tying everything back together before the conclusion. So how do you translate that into yo-yo talk?
So when it comes to like building up in the freestyle, I'd like to build up by, it could also be like picking up my own pace or like do more difficult tricks. And then during the build up, I do that. And when the climax comes up, I just drop something like, I just really drop something like even more harder or something even more flashier. And it doesn't need to be, it doesn't necessarily need to be tricks. It could be also in like a form of music use instead of tricks, but you can't really go wrong with both ways, or even using both like extremely good music use and a banger like to conclude, to go into a climax it's a really good thing.
Okay. And then after the climax, heading towards the end, what kind of tricks do you tend to put there?
So on that pace, I usually like slow down my tempo and like okay. show my more chill tricks. Basically like a slower pace, a more laid back, and then towards the conclusion, I'd usually love to like just randomly throw a curveball and do a banger at the end of the freestyle to catch everyone off guard.
That's so good. So just to cover those from beginning to end, the intro, you're introducing your style. When you're talking about it, it almost made me think of like an overture in a musical that they play all the songs, but it's just the instrumentals for it's sort of a medley of all the songs put together for what you're about to see. So it gets people ready for what kind of performance this is. Then you pick up the pace while you're building up to the climax. You do something really, really heavy hitting, something that uses the music to your advantage. Then you kind of slow it down, do your more chill stuff that people can kind of like relax, recover from that climax. And then in the end, you catch them off guard with one last banger. Then from there, what I'm interested in is like, what, so that was just summarizing for people to digest all that. But as far as telling a story, do your performances actually tell a story? Like, are you taking maybe an experience from your life and putting it in, or is your goal just, I want to show off my tricks?
It's usually, it depends on the song I get. It depends on the song I choose. Like some songs, like for example, my JYYC freestyle, it's an online competition held by Axel. I think it was Axel Yo-Yo Cup, I believe. Like the music I chose also tells a story. The music tells a story. It's basically, I picked the song about being true to yourself, as cheesy as it sounds. But I just really love that song, and I thought it will translate my style pretty well.
Hey, we are artists, and artists are cheesy. That comes with the job. You gotta
be pretentious.
Yeah, you gotta. So then that's awesome. That and it just said for people to know, like, you can go out there and try to express your emotions. Imagine, it's art. Go for it. Don't just go out trying to show off your best tricks, but also show off good tricks. So that's that. I loved all that. Man, let me see. Oh, one other thing I just wanted to hit on is you mentioned AP. For people listening, sometimes that means artistic performance. In this case, it means Asia Pacific Yo-Yo competition, correct?
For sure. Asia Pacific Yo-Yo Championship. My first overseas contest.
Ooh, pretty good. So then moving out into more the technical stuff. So we've kind of covered like the theme that you use, a little bit about the songs that you use. Maybe we'll hit on song structure later. But I kind of want to move into the technical aspects of, you have the yo-yo in your hand, you're doing a trick. You tend to start with really complex mounts. Could you talk about why that is?
Honestly, it's still gonna sound really stupid, but I don't really know myself, because that's how I just make tricks. I do tend to like use pretty complicated mounts and tricks, and sometimes when I'm doing freestyles, I really want to show this trick to people, so I just go with that as like the starter to introduce my how my style is really like. Basically like that. And then for the build-up, I'd usually, so basically for my freestyle, all I do is maybe tech, like sprinkle with a little bit of bangers, but I try to like make my tech or complex tricks variative as possible. So basically the start is me doing some complex tech, and I start to pick up the pace and maybe like slip a little bit of meta here and there. Just like maybe rack up the points and maybe help my positioning, because I mean, sometimes I also want to win too, right?
Yeah.
And then,
that's always our goal.
Yeah. And then during like between the build-up and climax, I like to slip in like a banger to get people's hyped up, and then maybe like do some big tricks, like maybe body tricks or some bangers or some fast-paced tech or like some really really flashy elements. And then I slow down like by doing more different tech, and then at the end I catch everyone off guard with a banger. That's usually how my freestyle structures are really are usually when it comes to competitions.
That's awesome. So how do you think the kind of the mounts that you use play into that? Or like, how do you set up transitions? Because a lot of your tricks start in really, really dense mounts, and a lot of your tech is like going through all this density. Kind of how do you navigate that? And how do you, because personally, I can't get into a really complex mount. I don't know how to get out of it, but you're able to do it really, really well and then go into other really complex mounts. So kind of how does that play into your, the tricks that you create?
So basically, when it comes to like complex tricks, the reason why I'm pretty consistent with my more complex tricks, it's because like when it comes to making complex tricks, I really analyze the string formation of the trick. So I already set up a lot of scenarios or backup plans in case if I drop the mount at this certain point of the trick, I know where to pick it back up without starting over. So I basically have a mapping of the trick on like how to get into every element, differently.
Okay. So you have
I study. Uh-huh. Oh, I'm sorry. I thoroughly study my how my tricks are as string formations, and how do I get into each mount that leads to each element of the trick. And then like basically I dissect the trick and like study, I completely study the DNA of the trick, and then find my ways into like getting my backup plans in case I mess up in the middle of the trick, like how to get back into them without falling behind the music.
That's awesome. So that's that actually reminds me of a concept in magic. I always have to draw magic into these shows, but all magicians at any point in their trick, they have an out. So like if they mess up a slight, or if somebody that they're doing the trick for says something that messes them up in some way, let's say that they need them to choose a number between like 30 and 40, and instead they say 11. Well, then now the magician has to figure out how to get out of that situation. So usually there'll be some set of outs that they have in their head of different methods or a different way that the trick can go to resolve that situation. So it's interesting to me as a magician, and also Yo-Yo, we're seeing you kind of using the same concept of like at every point in the trick, you know how you can alter the situation to get your advantage back and to get back into the place that you were, and then resume your lost time. Which that brings up, you do lose time in terms of the song, even if you're able to get back to where you were. So kind of how do you ever end up cutting out elements later on so that you can regain that time in your routine?
Oh, for sure. Like to get myself back into the pace of what I originally planned.
Yeah.
Sometimes I improvise by like cutting out some elements. So as a shortcut to get into a certain part of the music where I get left behind. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. No, that is an important aspect, and something that, I mean, I talk about yo-yo improvisation, which hasn't actually come up as much as I hoped on the podcast, but I love the concept of yo-yo improvisation. And it's super important. I mean, imagine if you're an actor and someone forgets their line on stage, you have to be able to improvise to help your scene partner now regain their point in the scene so that you can then continue on. So it's super important for this. If you have a really well choreographed routine and then you drop somewhere, which that's unavoidable, you're gonna mess up eventually, to be able to improvise around that and to stay flexible. So kind of what stuff do you generally do, and do you ever end up fully improvising a trick to maybe you have a little bit of extra time and you can't recover the mount that you had, you know it's going to take too long, do you ever end up improvising a trick just to fill that little gap of time?
Oh, for sure, it definitely happens to me too. So sometimes when there's just not enough time to make an element, I just like do whatever trick that pops up in my head that I think will fit accordingly to the music. Like it's like a fraction of a second of thought.
Yeah.
Like it's basically a gamble. It's basically a gamble to me, like, oh, will this fit the music or not? Or am I just like going to mess it up even further? But luckily, like the case of me messing up even further has not happened. And I hope it really doesn't happen to me or anyone, any other contestants too.
Well, so then how do you recommend practicing for those cases where you do need to improvise? Or do you practice that itself at all?
So basically, my advice for like improvising yo-yoing is really simple. It's mm-hmm. probably to make, it's probably to train your muscle memory too. It's quite interesting, but like, how do I say it? In terms of muscle memory, like maybe like you can do your autopilot trick, or you have like an extra trick that you don't put in the freestyle, so you can put it as backup in case you quote unquote lose one of your tricks in the freestyle.
Okay.
And then one of the other advices I have, which is something really important, is to, like to know like the DNA of your trick. Hmm. Like,
so what do you mean by DNA?
You gotta study thoroughly of how your string formations really are, like what your mount is like, basically how your string positioning or your positioning is really when you do a trick. And like you gotta like I've said this before, but you gotta really know the trick really well. Like, how does the trick work? How to get into this mount if I didn't enter the second element? Or like how what other mounts can work if in case I fail to do this element to continue the trick?
That makes me think of something that you mentioned the other day, which I really love this idea of a trick vocabulary. Could you go into what you mean by that and how that plays into what you're talking about of knowing every aspect of the trick?
So to simply put it into words, I'd like to describe trick vocabulary also as like your storage of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Because like storage of tricks and storage of elements, as I'd like to say it, because like vocabulary, with vocabulary and words, you can like mash them up and create a sentence. And it's the same with like trick vocabulary too. You can mash up a lot of elements, like learn the string formations, learn how they transition, learns like what mount would I land into if I do this? What mount would I land into if I do that? Like, basically trick vocabulary is like having separate elements where you really know, so you can really know where to transition from, or in order to make a trick.
Okay, so it's sort of knowing all the different permutations from any string formation. So like you get into one mount and then you're like, what's all the stuff that I can do out of this?
Yeah, absolutely. You just described it way better than I did.
Oh no, I'm just trying to summarize. But I think that's an interesting concept, because for me, I usually get into a mount. I mean, half of my tricks are I get into a trapeze and then I see what's all the stuff that I can do from this. And I'm still working on that like 3 years in of different swings and different like isolations and crap. So like, I think it's a massive amount of information to be able to fit in if you get into the kind of complex mounts that you get into, and then to be able to explore all the stuff that you can do from that, or at least to get enough that you're comfortable at any point in your trick to transition out of that. So I just want to emphasize that is a lot of work to have to do for each trick. So maybe what I'd want to think about is, I mean, when facing something with huge amounts of options, there always the 80-20 principle comes in, that 80% of your solutions are going to come from 20% of your options in this case. So like 80% of your tricks are going to come from 20% of the things that you do. So kind of how do you find those really, really important 20% of transitions out of a mount? If that makes sense. Like, where do you choose to spend your time and where do you choose to build up your vocabulary instead of going, I'm not going to do, I don't know, a suicide from here because that's not going to get me anywhere. That's not going to do anything. I don't know if that question makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense. I'm trying to like to put words in, trying to think of words right now. So, but basically what I'd like to do, is like utilize yo-yo movement because, for example, because yo-yo movement really translates into a lot of mounts, and it's just crazy to see like how one motion can result in different mounts or like very, very different results when you do them in different mounts. It's just really fascinating to me to see like how just one simple motion of swinging the yo-yo can bring you to an entirely new mount to explore.
Let's see, so sort of finding the small movements. I think that's a good answer there. Instead of like, what's the most complicated thing? It's what's the simple thing that I can transition into that gets me into a new mount where I now have explore from. Okay, so rather than looking for the complexity, you find those simple things. I think that answers the question.
It's also because one of like a good advice I also got was when it comes to making tricks, when it comes to making tricks or like doing tricks, try to exit a mount in the most elegant way possible. And like I think that's also something really interesting for me.
So how would you define elegance for that? Would that be simplicity or flowiest way, or what would you say?
That's a really cool question. Because like elegance varies from person to person. So people can do whatever they like according to what they define as elegant. But like for me, I really like to like explore unorthodox or like uncommon elements where like people, for like what people usually wouldn't do if they were in this mount, but I try to do it, like just like try to create something different. Like maybe like people expect me to do a reject from this mount, but no, instead I try to do some other movement. So like people are expecting me to do something, but I do the other thing. And I really think that's like a really cool aspect of making tricks too. It's also like having the element of like unexpected in doing tricks.
That's awesome. And that's something that I like. I also like that quote that you said about get into a complex mount and then get out in the most elegant way. Cause that to me is like, that's all of yo-yoing right there, is making knots and then getting out of those knots. But
it's how you like show the yo-yo and bind in the best way possible.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally making the yo-yo go up and down and then add a little bit of extra stuff in the middle.
That's basically what yo-yoing is all about. It all ends up, every trick ends up back in your hand anyway.
Yeah. Let's make a trick that the yo-yo dies, you stomp on it, break the axle, and then you walk off stage. That'd be really unexpected.
I mean, it does unexpected. Like, he's a little bit confused, but he's got the spirit.
Oh my god. That'd be really killing your yo-yo. So how would you said that you go for sort of more unorthodox and uncommon tricks. Where do you find those, or what do you do to make a trick unorthodox or uncommon?
Basically, trial and error.
Okay.
Like I'd refrain. I'd usually like when it comes to like making my own original tricks, I'd like to refrain doing the elements like a lot of people have seen before. So like maybe if I'm in a mount, like take for example, if I was in a double or nothing mount, people will usually do a pop or like a Yuki, the classic Yuki trick. But when it comes to double or nothing, I'd like to think if I slide the yo-yo into a chopstick mount I make on my right hand, would it make like a completely new mount? Because how do I say it? Oh my god, my brain's lagging right now. But what I'm trying to say is, what I'd like to say is like when it comes to making tricks, I just love like the unexpected aspect from it, because like when people expect you to do like maybe a pop, you could do like you can suddenly whip out the slack, like catch people off guard and like make them think, oh, you can actually do that with that mount. That's really I should have thought of that before, maybe like something like that.
So I think there's kind of two things you're saying. One is sort of an internal unexpectedness and an external unexpectedness. And for external unexpectedness, there is kind of the audience's perception of what you're going to do as a yo-yoer. And to be able to break those expectations, you as a yo-yoer need to know kind of what the current meta is. You have to be watching contest videos. You have to be watching all the videos that companies put out of all the players and all the tricks that they're putting out, and kind of know what yo-yo epoch we're living in and what the tricks today look like. And then the opposite. Then there's also the internal, which is we as yo-yoers have all kind of learned. I mean, a lot of us learned from Andre and from Yo-Trix and from a few different other sources, but that means that we have a certain set of tricks that are kind of the standard. And so we have these internal kind of limitations because, you know, as great as Andre is and as good as Yo-Trix is, they aren't the infinity of possibilities of yo-yoing because there's always more options of things to do from a mount. And so there's sort of an engineering concept. I don't know if it's really engineering, but just a concept I've heard that Apple uses a lot, especially Apple, but a lot of companies use, which is starting from first principles, which is that you just throw out your assumptions of as a designer, in this case of tricks, you throw out any assumptions that you have and think, what is, starting from the most basic, what can I do from here? And then go from there. Instead of what do I see other people doing and how can I be like them? It's what is actually physically possible from right here. So it's sort of that internal unexpectedness that now as a trick designer, you're almost breaking your own expectations of what's possible.
Oh, for sure. Also, like another saying I would like to like implement is like to go out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Because what I've been noticing in like when it comes to making tricks, what I like to notice is with each new trick I get, the difficulty of the trick gets even harder. And I think like even though like sometimes it's a pain in the ass, like when I try to do it in a freestyle because my tricks are getting harder and harder. But on the other hand, like again, I expand my trick vocabulary by doing that. I found a lot of new movements. I find a lot of new string formations and what to do with them, and then I can implement them to a lot of more mounts and create a lot of more possibilities to make tricks from.
Definitely. There, God, I hate this. There's three things that I want to rant about from that, because that's so good. And this whole concept is so good. The first one is, I've talked a lot about my spaghetti tech theory, which is the thought that if you have two plates of spaghetti, they each have their own unique in the universe tangle of spaghetti that are like completely different from each other. But if you now bring those to a table and show people, they go, oh, look, two plates of spaghetti. And that to me is kind of what tech looks like, that if you have two tangles of string, they may to me as a yo-yoer look totally and completely different, But to somebody else, or even somebody who doesn't know those specific tricks, they're just going to look like two tangles of string. But something that what you're saying about the trick vocabulary that really gets me going is that, yes, in that moment, in that instant, those two plates of spaghetti, quote unquote, or two tangles of string might look the same, but what you can do with them and the stories that you can tell and the tricks that you can do out of them, as you as the trick designer, if you as the trick designer know all the different possibilities that you have from those two different tangles, then now you can use those different tangles as tools to build different stuff. Because if you know this tangle right now may look, you know, gross and tiny and techy and dense, but in a second, it's going to turn into this giant arm trick that's really, really cool. Or maybe this one's good, but then I can do a plane change and go into a really cool horizontal exit. And those two now have two very different exits. Then now that breaks my spaghetti theory, or at least it's a really good counter to it. Kind of, if you use those different tangles as tools, then now that's really useful and something that you can start to build. And another thing that I like to talk about is sort of this collector's mindset that people think, I mean, I think all of us have had this experience that when we look at Yo-Yo Expert and we see these are the beginner, these are the intermediate, and this is the expert tricks. And if I learn everything on that list, now I know all of yo-yoing. And then we get through it and we're like, oh, I still suck at yo-yoing. I'm still not creating stuff. And so it's the thought that we as yo-yoers think in terms of collecting these tricks. And once we've learned all of the tricks, then now we know everything. And that's not true. You actually have to understand the transitions between them and all the different elements. And so I think what you're saying plays into that of to stay uncommon and unorthodox, we have to create this big vocabulary of all the different stuff that we can do and kind of get comfortable with moving between different elements rather than I'm going to learn, I can't even think of, I'm going to learn black hops and now I'm going to learn, I can't think of any of the basic
terms. Ladder escape.
Yeah, like it's what can I learn from black hops and what can I learn from ladder escape? And now how can I implement those lessons into all the other things? Because all those basic tricks do have important transitions between elements that can definitely be utilized. So that's something I just want to toss out for people who are starting out, but also at any level, like you can start implementing that. And there's one more thing, yeah. But I'll shoehorn it in later in the episode.
Yeah. Also, what I'd like to say is when it comes to like the trick ladder and yo-yo expert, uh-huh. like the easy tricks, advanced tricks or intermediate tricks, I'd also like to say, I like to think it as those are also like very, very classic and cool tricks like ladder escape, rancid milk, etc. But like, I also like to think of them as like tricks that could equip me with the knowledge to build my tricks from later on.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Just want to point that out.
Some that I have thought about is that like tricks themselves don't exist. There's just a series of elements put in different ways, and sometimes people put names on them. Just like a song doesn't exist. A song can always be in the process of changing, and musicians might have a song and they play it one day and then 10 years later it sounds totally different, but it's still the same song. So anyway, what those basic songs like Mary Had a Little Lamb or Ladder Escape in terms of tricks have in common is that they do teach you really important lessons, and they're good exercises. They're more like exercises than actual tricks, because each one does teach, like a wrist mount. I can't think of a trick that starts in wrist mount, but I know there is one in Yo-Yo Expert that I learned a long time ago. I think it's and what. It might be and what, but I could be
wrong. Oh yeah, what a classic trick. I love that trick. Damn, yeah. I think I need to pick that tutorial back up, because I completely forgot what it's like, but I remember like spending weeks trying to learn that.
Me too. Me and my friend were trying that for so long, and he learned it, and I think I still don't know it. I should go back.
But it really does. It really do be such a classic trick.
Yeah, but those are good exercises, and to try to take those and modify them, and then start building up a style from there would be a really, really good way to you know, approach yo-yoing rather than thinking those tricks are the end all be all to all of yo-yoing. But I'm talking too much. So I want to.
It's a podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
but it's, talking.
You're the guest. So I think I talked about those. Let's see, what else do we have here? God, there's so much I want to talk to you about. Oh, yes. So in terms of staying unpredictable and unconventional, I think that that's, I mean, entertainment is keeping people paying attention. And something that is really important to keep people's attention is novelty. Just seeing a yo-yo for the first time is novel enough to make some people pay attention, but then you have to keep their attention. So kind of how do you keep your tricks completely unpredictable? And I know I kind of asked that earlier, but I kind of want to use an example and kind of put a case study to this. You recently posted an arm trick that ended in a really cool Mach 5 and then had a really, really good exit to it. I'm interested in, how did you design that? What was kind of your thought process when you made that particular trick?
So basically, the trick I just uploaded, like the arm trick that had the Mach 5, is basically a trick I've been working on. Like, it's a trick I've been stuck on for like a year or so, but I haven't really gotten like, the trick I just posted is something like I concluded a trick in my last post.
Huh. And by the way, for people listening, that was April 27th of 2022 that was posted.
Sorry?
Go ahead. Posted, yeah, just for people who might be listening 10 years from now or something. That's just when it was posted.
Yeah. So my thought process behind it was basically, again, trial and error. Like, I try some unconventional movements and like to see what can they result in. And that result, I try to like make another stem from it. And like, what can I do from this mount that I got from that element? So basically, how do I say it? Yeah, like to like completely dumb it down. I just like, over and over, I completely do trial and error, trial and error, trial and error until I come up with something that I'm actually satisfied with. And like, and that makes me think, oh yeah, I think this is good enough. Like, I really like doing this trick. I'm really satisfied with how the trick goes throughout the whole duration of the trick. It's usually, my thought process when like creating tricks, but like what I said earlier is more like, more to like what my mindset is.
It sounds like you start with a mount or with a you do start with a mount, and then you add some transition, you get to some new mount, and now you're like, what do I do from here that's unexpected? And in this case, I mean, that Mach 5 came out of nowhere to me. So you keep doing that. When do you know that trick is done?
Oh, that's honestly a very good question. Like, in some cases, I like to end the trick where, like, I think, damn, I don't think I can find anything from this mount anymore. So let's just end it with some really cool flashy element, or, like, maybe sometimes when the trick gets too long, like, because sometimes when I create a trick, some of my tricks get too long, and, like, I feel like it will be boring to do and to watch because, I mean, like, It's going to look like a full one show of like complete dense tech, but in some cases I'd like to like keep it. I've been like recently learning how to keep my tricks short and simple, yet still like leaves an impression on people. Like, it doesn't need to be long. It doesn't need to be like above 30 seconds. Like to present the whole trick, but it could be like just like a good 10 or 15 seconds to showcase like a handful of elements, but each and every element is like really, really well taught, like really, really unconventional, like something like people rarely see in yo-yoing. That's basically what I've been up to, like, when it comes to creating tricks, even though like I've been kind of stuck in a trick block for the past few weeks, but yeah.
I'll just take an opportunity to shout out a book that I put out for free that's literally about how to get out of a yo-yo rut, that you can pick up in the link in my Instagram bio at Links Toys, link in description, etc. Anyway,
advertisement in the middle.
Yeah. No, I think that concept of the yo-yo rut, some everybody experiences, and it's like, I think it's a natural part of any art. And I think that during those times, you're also kind of like, those ideas in your head are marinating. And then typically once that time ends, and tell me if you disagree, like after I get out of a rut, I'm just like overwhelmed with a flood of new creativity. Would you agree with that?
For sure. Like I've actually heard like some of my friends do that, but when it comes like trick rod, what I usually do is like I'd usually stop yo-yoing for a week. Like maybe stop yo-yoing for a week, and like because I usually when in my free time I yo-yo a lot, like because I'm a person who fidgets a lot, and like I need to like move my hands or move my fingers in order to keep me occupied. So like yo-yoing also plays a big part in like helping me out on that habit. And then, but I purposely withdraw myself from yo-yoing so I can take my time and like maybe envision some tricks in my head that like yo-yoing in my mind. I sometimes like to try yo-yoing in my mind, like envision a string formation and see what I will do from it. How will I move from this mount? How will I utilize this slack? And then a week later, I try to yo-yo, and like I try to apply what are the things I gain from like all that thinking, or like visualizing tricks in my head that could translate into like my real yo-yo. I hope that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Actually, I want to write that down as something to put into a later edition of this book, the ebook. Visualizing trick, that's not really something I ever do, but it does make me wonder, when you are sitting in, I mean, even just mindlessly fidgeting, are you doing that fidgeting intentionally and trying to come up with different permutations of tricks, or is your practice for creating tricks kind of its own dedicated time specifically to making tricks? Because I'm always just kind of fidgeting mindlessly. Even when I'm filming for my Instagram, it's usually just creating in the moment and then being like, oh, this is cool, I'll do this until I land it. So
yeah, for sure.
Like really intentionally trying to figure out different permutations and creating your outs for your routines.
Usually it's just like, when I'm not doing anything, I just like mindlessly, not mindlessly, that's kind of contradictory.
Yeah.
I usually like yo-yo in my mind, like without thinking about it too much, while fidgeting like whatever's in front of me. But like most of the time, I usually visualize me yo-yoing in my head, like utilizing what the tricks I would do if I was in X mount or like in Y mount.
I see. That's good to know. One other thing that just came up when we were talking the other day that I really, really liked is that you tend to, instead of like ending a trick, I mean, eventually you find there's no more that we can do within this. I've already explored a concept fully. But before you get to that point where you're like, this trick is going to end, you're kind of looking for points where other people might end a trick. For example, you mentioned about a green triangle when we were talking the other day. And
oh yeah, yeah.
Most people end there. Actually, go ahead.
Yeah. So when it comes to like making transitions for tricks, when it comes to making transitions for tricks, what I'd like to do is like before I maybe like, for example, I try to end my tricks in a GT. Like it could be a good ending. Like if I want to keep it short, I will use that GT as the ending. But when I want to like continue to another trick, For example, I could like utilize the kink that was made in the GT and like hop the yo-yo inside the kink and like make another trick from that, and like or sew it together with another trick I have. So basically like combining a lot of basically like analogy like I'd like to make is like combining a lot of sentences and like to make a paragraph. Yeah, that's basically what I think of it as.
Yeah, completely. Where some people might hit enter and say, all right, my paragraph's over, you're like, no, what's another sentence that I can put here? Or maybe where someone might usually put a period, you go, wait, what if I put a comma and continue this and keep going from there?
Yeah, for sure. Like making the trick keep like going and all flowy, etc.
Definitely. That also reminds me, first of all, it ties into what we were talking about earlier of a vocabulary, having that trick vocabulary and knowing so much that if you look at a GT, you don't go, okay, that's the end. That's where everybody ends their tricks. I'll pop out and then bind. It's, all right, what actually is a GT? Let's think about it from first principles. Well, it's a wrap around a string that then leads into the yo-yo, and the yo-yo's landed on a loop. So now we have a kink in the string. And with that kink, I can do X, Y, Z, et cetera.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing past Z, but A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and so on. So that's sort of what we're talking about with the vocabulary and why that's so important to know other stuff. And maybe a good method for people to do is find typical endings for tricks. Think about it from first principles. Think about stuff that you can do from that and what that string formation really is. And then create tricks from there. Would be one way to kind of implement this theory into practice. Actively.
Sorry, could you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Question. Well, it's more of a statement, but. Yeah. No,
my bad.
It's all good. We can kind of look at where tricks generally end, take those endings, figure out what formation the string is in, and then create tricks from there as a way to sort of implement in practice what it is that you're talking about. So it's sort of maybe an exercise for people to go and try out.
For sure.
Awesome. So something else that we talked about the other day that I really liked, you talked about Slack, and I know that you use Slack in very unconventional ways and really interesting ways. So I kind of want to know, how do you know, first of all, when you can create Slack? How do you find Slack in a trick?
So when it comes to Slack, like what I will do in tricks is when I enter a mount, like I analyze the string formation and I'll try to experiment if I slide the string off this finger, can it create a Slack? Or like when it has like an extra wrapper around the yo-yo, like I'd like to think, can I reject this little part and like maybe create a Slack that could lead into another mount? Or like basically if I swing the yo-yo here as I release the string on this finger, can I create like an extra residue of string that could result in a Slack? That's basically what my thought process when it comes to Slack.
I got you. So it's sort of looking for things that you can do with. It sounds like for everything that you do, you're analyzing like in depth what the string formation looks like right now. And then what can I do from there? So then kind of the things you're looking for with Slack are extra loops around the bearing sort of, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then once you have a piece of Slack, what do you do with it? What are kind of the options of things that if someone's looking at their mount right now and they go, I know that Slack can exist, what sort of stuff do you generally think about in terms of options to use that Slack for?
So like when a certain element produces, when I like come up with a Slack in a certain mount, like what I'd like to do with it is maybe, can I like bypass the Slack through the yo-yo to create another mount? Or like I could like hook the Slack onto the yo-yo to create like another mount where I can experiment from. Or maybe I can utilize the Slack and swing it like and like hook it onto my finger. So the yo-yo also so it creates a place where it creates a new opening for where I can move the yo-yo into. So I can create another mount to transition into, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. And of course, like if you're swinging it onto your finger, you could also swing it onto an elbow or I don't know, get it onto your knee. I know Anthony Rojas has done some really cool stuff with like body Slack tricks. You could also like just do all kinds of whips and stuff. So that's good of things that you can think about when you have a piece of Slack. Man, is there anything else? Just because your Slack tricks are so cool, kind of what's your process with those to make those come around? Or is it just implementing all the stuff that we've already talked about?
So thank you, but like when it comes to like Slacks, it's just what you said. It all stems from all the experiment I do from like analyzing the mount I have. It's basically that.
Okay. That's awesome. So kind of the biggest thing I'm hearing is anytime you're in any mount, really analyze the hell out of it and figure out what you can do with it. So then
for sure.
One
like I analyze like all the string layers and like how it or like how it hooks onto my finger or how it intertwines with maybe like another layer of the string, etc. And like I try to utilize the best as I can like to create something good out of it.
It's just a lot of trial and error sitting in your room and sure. Experimenting on different stuff. That's awesome.
That's why I usually take so long to create a new trick.
Yeah. No, I can see that. But once they come out, they're so good. Man, some of my wonders, your Slack tricks tend to be very, very big. And you're able to do really, really large tricks. How would you say that the size of the space that you're yo-yoing in plays into creating tricks that big?
We're talking about like the area around me?
Yeah, like the actual physical space that you're practicing in.
Oh, okay. So basically, like, I'm lucky enough, like, I have a room, which is, like, I have a really wide and, like, a really high ceiling room. So basically, when I yo-yo, I don't need to really think about my yo-yo hitting anything, or, like, I don't need to think about the yo-yo hitting my ceiling or, like, smacking my desk, etc. Like, I have, like, a really wide space for me to yo-yo, so it also like helps me a lot in making like extra large tricks, like maybe like a body trick or like above the head tricks. It really takes part into like giving me all the freedom I can into my movement. My ceiling is like twice my height.
Oh, so you're good, because that's like
yeah,
you get some definite height in there.
But like I think it's like a good 3 meters. I feel like maybe like 2.7 meters. I think it's around that for my ceiling.
Wow, that's oh, my dumb imperial system brain is like, how big is that?
I honestly don't know how to translate that into inches too.
Hey, you know what? I have a computer in front of me. It's worth it. It's worth it. Let's find out. You said 2.7?
It's 2.7, like, probably like 2.4 after I see it again.
2.4 or 1.4?
2.4 meters.
Meters, 2 feet is seven. It's about 8 feet.
I'd say that's like a pretty optimal space for me to yo-yo to.
That's twice your height?
Yeah. Wait, no. No, definitely you're not. Definitely not. Let me just stand in my room and I like examine.
All right.
I said it's like 1.8 times as a, wait, no. Yeah, I was like, my brain's really lagging right now. But I like say it's like, it's 1.5 times taller than me. And I'm like, okay. I'd like to say I'm, what is my height? I'd like to say like I'm 5.9, I think, or 5.10.
Okay. Gotcha. Then, so point being, you have enough room.
Yeah. To dumb it down. The conclusion is I have enough room.
Okay. That's good. You know, I definitely think like, I mean, for me, my tricks got a lot bigger when I moved into a bigger space. And that's had a huge impact on me. So if anyone's listening and they're like, oh, I only ever do these tiny little tech tricks and you want to get bigger, try being in a bigger space and then exploring that space, because that really has helped me, at least. And it sounds like it's helped you as well, or kind of allowed you to make those bigger things.
Or outdoors too, if you want like all the freedom you want.
Yeah, definitely. And to get people staring at you.
For sure.
As long as you don't mind it. Oh man. So I love that. I also wanted to talk a little bit about flow and kind of your thoughts on flow. What it is.
Oh, so, mm-hmm. So oh, this is, I really like this topic for flow. Mm-hmm. Like, even though I don't really think myself highly in aspects of flow, but I just really like to see like a good trick with good flow. I just love to see it. But my take on flow is like, I really like the analogy I have with flow is like, I like to think of flow the same thing as handwriting. So basically what I'm trying to say is when it comes to handwriting, like people can write the same word, people can write the same sentence, but one cannot like exactly copy another person's exact handwriting. And that's what I'm trying to put into you. And that's what I caught when I think about flow too. Like, for example, I can do Charles Haycock's tricks, but I can never make it as good as or as flowy as he does. So basically, I also think it has something to do. It also heavily ties to like how we learned yo-yoing as we started out, because everyone's muscle memory is different. How everyone moves the yo-yo is, even though it's the same movement, like their motion when doing it is different. Like, how do I say it?
It's almost to me if you have a fourth grader reading Shakespeare and they don't know anything about what they're saying versus someone who's on Broadway doing Hamlet, like, one of them is going to be saying it in a very, very different way. And there's a reason one of them is getting paid a living salary to do it. And the other one is a fourth grader, just like voice breaking his way through a speech for his class. Like there's very different intention, very different meaning and sort of style behind each of those. Which I'm not at all calling you a fourth grader doing Charles Haycock's tricks, but you can both be doing the same thing and have a totally different approach.
Yeah, it's basically like a small analogy I made years back, and it's like what I like to think of what I'd like to think about it when it comes to flow. But it's like really interesting to see like a lot of people doing the same trick, but everyone like does it differently. Like it just looks differently, even though the complete structure of the trick is the exact same, but it just doesn't look the same. It's definitely something very, very cool to me. Like people do it, maybe people maybe can do it like at like different speeds, or like maybe like a different speed of momentum, etc.
It's almost like when we learn a language, we learn it in our regional accent. And so like I've kind of learned in this Southern Californian style from people like Grant Johnson, Alex Satori, Anthony Rojas, all those sorts of people. And we all learned from Yoshi Mikimoto. Like he was the grand teacher of all of us. But so we all kind of have our own sort of regional yo-yo accent, if we bring in that vocabulary that like we're all sort of learning yo-yoing as a language. So we all kind of have developed our own language and our own style. And so then when we take on someone else's trick that they developed in their own language, we can't really say it quite like they did. We don't really have their same. So we end up saying it sort of with an accent and doing it with an accent, which is, you know, that's our little bit of style. And I do think it, as far as that handwriting analogy you're talking about, it is sort of another way of talking about style. So how would you say style is developed, and how have you developed your style? And is there anything that you intentionally try to do to make your style more, you know, push it in a certain direction, let's say?
So to simply put it, what I think of like when it comes to developing style, mm-hmm. It's pretty simple. It's like basically like to find what you really like to do in yo-yoing and maybe expand from that. Maybe if you like, for example, if you like tricks inspired by poi, you can do like poi-esque tricks, like translate poi tricks into yo-yoing, and that could also like become your own signature style. And for me, like how I develop my own style is basically
motorcycles going by.
I live right beside the main road, so there's a lot of motorcycle noises, so please excuse me for that. But yeah, when it comes to my own style, like how I developed it was I tried to copy like a lot of my favorite yo-yoers, such as Kieran Cooper, Polo Garcamo, then like a lot of other people like Zach Wormley too. Like I copy a lot of their tricks, and I also analyze their tricks too. And like I also use that analyzation as like equipment for me to like expand on my own trick, and like basically that's how my style stemmed.
Okay.
Basically also... So I basically like take a lot of inspiration from a lot of yo-yo players, and I put my own unique twist on it without trying to seem like I'm taking like without like trying to make it look very, very visible that I'm taking inspiration from this person. Like I'd like to take the subtleties of this person's tricks and like analyze it and create my own twist on it.
I see. That's awesome. So then are you also analyzing their style or just their tricks and then putting your own style into it?
No, basically I only analyze how the tricks I learn.
Okay.
So like because when it comes to the tricks I do, like automatically registers in my brain to like analyze the trick completely.
So is that going through it in half speed on YouTube and trying to figure it out? Or how are you, what are you looking for when you're analyzing? Are you like slowing down the video and tearing apart each element and mount, or is it something else that you're analyzing?
So usually I analyze as you said, like making the video slow motion and like learn element per element, or like, and in some cases like I just see a certain element from the person from this trick I like. Like for example, oh, I like this element, I'd like to like implement the movement or the momentum this person did and like implement them into this mount and see if I can make anything new from it, or like maybe I can do the same movement of this person's element, but I can do it cross-handed, or maybe like inverted, or maybe like above the head, etc.
That's awesome. So it's trick by trick, but also element by element that you're kind of deconstructing. Yeah. That's amazing. Awesome. So I think that covers my questions on there. And let me just double check. You know, that hits on a lot of what I wanted to talk about.
I'm glad I did so.
Yeah, no, this has been so good. Some other stuff we talked about though is you're kind of trying to pick up some other props. Is that correct? Other than yo-yoing, I mean.
Yeah. So basically I go to a university where it mainly studies hotelier aspects and tourism aspects, and bartending's also one of them. So in recent days, I've been learning mixology and a lot of flaring too. And I've tried to implement what I learned in yo-yo to flare, or like vice versa. I like to like implement flare into yo-yoing, like how you did it, Ross, like with how you did the shadow bind, like it was inspired by flaring. I also thought that was like also very, very cool.
Thank you. But for those who don't know, flare is, can you talk about what flare is actually?
So flaring is basically oh my god, I've been doing flare for like pretty long, but I still don't know how to define it. But it's basically like juggling, but you do it with bottles and tin shakers. Usually, these bottles are also filled with like some sort of liquid. So for bartenders when they're on the job, they can also do some flare to please the crowd, or like to make like a flashy, like an extra service, like to seem flashy for the customer, and maybe like add more experience for the customer, like by juggling, by doing flaring, like flipping the bottle, or like throwing the bottle and catching it behind their back or behind their head.
And basically, like yo-yoing, there's like the classic tricks that everyone can do, and it's just like an easy way to please a crowd, and you can land them every time. But then there's also full-on flare competitions where people are juggling 6 bottles and 7 tins at the same time, flinging them around, doing insane like things that you know how far people take things. As in yo-yoing, people take flare to the same levels that yo-yoers take yo-yoing, that it just looks inhuman when they're doing it.
Oh, for sure. Like when I see like any flare competition, I just sit there and ponder like, how the hell do people do these things? Like the amount of practice they must go through. Like I just really respect the dedication.
So then with because in flare, kind of the necessary skills are general toss juggling, as well as there's a lot of contact juggling elements where you're like rolling things on your body. There's a lot of balancing. Those sorts of skills, how do you tie those in with yo-yoing and vice versa? And kind of how do they inspire each other?
So flare and yo-yoing are basically two different things. One is like a piece of metal attached to a string, and one is like a bottle and a tin. But like what I'd like to translate from it is like, when it comes to like taking inspirations from yo-yoing to flare, I try to stem it from like big body tricks, like maybe catching a suicide behind my head or like behind the back. And it also translates into flare too. Like I flip or toss the bottle and I transition it by catching it behind the back, and then like proceed to throw it and catch the bottle behind my head, etc.
Absolutely. And I think the more props people pick up, the more like different, it's just like looking at a new yo-yoer and being like, oh, they have a totally different style I've never thought about. But then I forget his actual name, but Blah Blanchard on Instagram.
Ricardo Fraolini.
There we go. Ricardo Fraolini. Every time I see one of his tricks, I'm like, oh, never seen anything like that. I he would be on the podcast, but apparently he has too much of an accent, he told me. So I was that close to having him on. Maybe one day. So
hopefully
anyway,
one day.
Yeah.
But Ricardo, if you're hearing this podcast, thank you. And I love you so much.
Oh, we all love
your
you so
tricks
much.
Are completely insane.
They're so different. But that same kind of feeling that you have towards seeing someone like Ricardo comes out every time you see like the entire Poi community or the entire Flare community and all of the stuff they've developed. Diablo 2, like there's so much that you can pick up if you just learn the basics of something else. You learn a totally new vocabulary of movements that you never knew were out there. Or like I study magic and there's so much I learned from magic that you just directly apply into yo-yoing. And you're like, oh, now I can do all this stuff. So like going outside of yo-yoing and outside your comfort zone, kind of what you're saying earlier, is like, that's super important and a great way to find new inspiration.
For sure. It also like takes part into expanding your vocabulary, not only in yo-yoing, but also like the other things you're also trying to learn right now.
Oh, completely. Completely. Because now your vocabulary isn't in just one thing even. Awesome. It's almost like learning a new language. So perfect. I think that's a good little last question. Let's move into the wrap up here. Unless you got anything else that you want to get out.
I think that's it.
Sweet.
I think I've said everything I want to say, and maybe like shout out to Ross too, like for making all of this possible, Team Duncan and Original Tro for the support too. Oh yeah, and don't forget if you can or if you may, you can please cop the GTRJS, my signature yo-yo that just came out 2 months ago. There's still some of them left. Fucking yo-yo expert.
Yo-yo expert. Any other retailers?
Yo-yo expert, Yo-yo Sam, Rewind, Spin Gear. They're all available. On those retailers, my bad.
Pick those up, support Duncan and Original Throw. I've been seeing Original Throw popping up on different on the other shirt. So that covers the plugs. There's two other little like wrap-up things. One is kind of a takeaway point. If there's any one thing that you think people should remember this episode for, any one thing we talked about you really want people to know forever, what would that one point be? I'll say one and you say one too.
So like a good takeaway I can think of is when you're like, again, it's gonna sound cheesy, but like just do what feels right for you. And like it'll all fall into place. Like get used to your own methods. You don't need to like follow a certain person's like thought process or anything, because like of course we're all different. We have all different thought processes, we have all different muscle memories, we have different mindsets. So just adjust to your own thing, and I feel like you guys will find like your own quote unquote true calling. That's very pretentious of me to say, but yeah.
Yeah, no, as much as it pains me to say, I will never have Jonathan's style. I just have come to know that. But I love my style. So that's definitely a good point. Something I'd say is building out your trick vocabulary and kind of exploring as many different parts of a trick as you can. So finding a trick that you're in and then go through all the permutations of exits and learn those as outs, because that's important if you're doing a performance or a competition. It doesn't matter. You always have to make it look like you know what you're doing. And the only way to do that is to build up all the options when things go wrong. And also doing that, it sounds like, will help you to build new tricks as well. So I think those are some good takeaway points. Plugs, as we said, look up Duncan, look up Original Throw, get that GTR. And finally, the Endless Chain, which I am stealing 100%. I mean, this whole podcast format is from Jonah Babbins, but these last three questions especially, and ending in the Endless Chain, is from Jonah Babbins, creator of Discourse in Magic, which is a really good podcast and you should all go listen to. But what the question is we want this podcast to go on forever. So who is someone that you can put me in touch with that you think has to be on this podcast?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question.
Sort of
future. What I'd like to really see on the podcast is a good friend of mine, Polo Gapamo. He's the two-time Asia champion and Thai national champion. Dude's basically taught like he basically taught like a good 75% of the things I know in yo-yoing. Like me and him share tricks a lot, and like he's just a genius when it comes to tricks. Like I could show him like one element to him, and then he comes back with like three variations of the element in like 10 minutes.
And would I be correct in saying that's P Polar on Instagram, right?
Yeah, at P Polar on Instagram.
Yeah, PPOLOR.
Polo, if you're hearing this podcast, I love you, bro.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. I love his tricks. He's busy. He's a dental student. Man. Well, perfect. I think that brings us to the conclusion. So thank you so much, Jonathan.
Thank you so much too, Ross. It's been like such a pleasure having given the chance to be like in this podcast to talk about what I really feel about yo-yoing and what my thought process is like in yo-yoing, because I've never really actually thought about like how I think about my tricks, and like this podcast helped me like define more into my style or like what my style is like. So thanks for the chance too, man.
Thanks for being here. That's what I love to hear. All right. Thank you so much for everyone listening. Peace.
Thank you for everyone listening. See ya.